You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined, as always, by Rob Rang. Happy Victory Monday to all of our listeners. The Seahawks are NFC West champions. We're going to be breaking down the incredible coaching job by Pete Carroll and his staff this season, plus some defensive takeaways on a jam-packed Monday episode. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is a refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. For the first time since 2016 and the fifth time during the Pete Carroll era, the Seahawks are NFC West champions, following a 20-9 win over the Rams in a defensive slugfest. Rob, Seattle's going to get at least one home playoff game for the first time in 4 years. This is a team that early in the season was winning with the offense, winning shootouts. The defense was historically inept, especially against the passing game. And yet here we are now, the last 6 weeks, the Seahawks giving up less than 14 points per game, allowing just 3 field goals to the Rams yesterday. That begs the question, is this the best coaching job that Pete Carroll has done during his 11 seasons in Seattle?
It's a great question, Corbin. I think there's a very legitimate case to be made that this is the best coaching job that Pete Carroll has ever done. Now, obviously, they won a Super Bowl a few years back, and so it's easy to go back to that 2013 season, like, well, that was the best because you get to host the Lombardi Trophy and all of the other seasons in which they've had incredible success. Again, I think that is a credit to Pete Carroll. But at the same time, Corbin, I'd also argue that those who were significantly more talented teams, this is a team that, as you just mentioned, its defense was so bad early in the year. And for the team to be able to completely reverse that and play their best football down the stretch of the regular season, oh, by the way, during a pandemic, oh, by the way, during the Black Lives Matter movement, all these different things that could be a distraction for a lot of other coaches. Instead, it just felt like Carroll and his coaching staff, don't want to give all the credit just to Pete Carroll, but the rest of his coaches as well. It really feels like this is a team that has kind of bought in to the protect the team type of a mindset, and the fact that they are playing as good a football right now as they have all year long, when you're seeing so many other teams around the NFL landscape that are kind of starting to shut it down, let's be honest. I think that really is one, if not the best job that Pete Carroll has ever done, certainly among the best, and certainly right there with the Super Bowl years they had in the past.
I think just considering the stark difference between where this defense is at now and where it was at the midway point, this is without a doubt the best coaching job that Pete Carroll and his staff have done. And that's just accounting for that particular factor. As you mentioned, the pandemic, and Pete Carroll broke this down after the game yesterday. He was asked by one of the reporters about just how much more challenging this year has been and how much more rewarding it is to get an NFC West championship given the circumstances and everything that is going on outside of the football world right now with this pandemic and just all these different things that are going on, all these social issues that we've been tackling as a country. The toughest year of our lives, 2020 has been. And for him to galvanize this unit, and obviously the chemistry has been there. This is a team that has been a cohesive unit in the locker room all season, but that didn't necessarily translate to the field because you had so many injuries, particularly on the defensive side of the football. And in the secondary, they were sorting guys in and out of the lineup. You had Jamal Adams out for 4 games. Shaquille Griffin was out for 4 games. Carlos Dunlap didn't come until week 8 and made his debut in week 9. They were struggling to rush the passer. I mean, you consider all of the things that were going on in defense. For this team, I thought the defense could get better, but I did not expect what we have seen the last 6 weeks, where suddenly Jamal Adams said yesterday that this is the best defense in football. And I don't think you can necessarily laugh at him right now. If you look at what Seattle's done the last 6 weeks, everybody was – all the skeptics going into this week were saying they haven't played anybody the last 5 weeks. That's the reason the defense is playing better. The Rams are easily the best offense that they have faced during that six-game span. Well, the Cardinals, I guess you could say as well. The Cardinals have a lot of weapons on offense. But during that span, those are the two best offenses that they faced. They held the Cardinals to 21 points. The group is playing much better than they were back in week 11 now, giving up just 3 field goals to the Rams. I have to give a ton of credit to Carroll and his staff here because the turnaround – it's got to be one of the most impressive turnarounds on either side of the football that I've seen by any NFL team in a long, long time. Just transforming a defense that, as I mentioned, was historically poor in the first 8 games. And now, again, you can make that case right now. In the last 6 weeks, there's not a defense that's playing better than Seattle's. That is a lot of that credit needs to go to the man on the sideline that is known for his defensive coaching. He and his staff have done a phenomenal job with adjustments, getting this defense to where it is now playing at a championship level.
Yeah, they really have. I mean, that's the thing, is that they have changed up their scheme a little bit. I mean, just think about with KJ Wright specifically. I mean, this was a guy that for so long had been playing that weak side linebacker role, at a very, very high level, arguably a Pro Bowl level. And then you're asking him to play a little bit more of that strong side position, this year. So you have some transition there. You have the acquiring of DJ Reed. You have the acquiring of Carlos Dunlap, of Jamal Adams, being able to blend all of those players, all of those personalities, asking them to play multiple different roles. And that's going to take some time. And that's what you and I have each kind of tried to preach some patience with some of our listeners, because it does take time for, to be able to galvanize, as you said, the entire roster. And the fact that they have been able to do that really is remarkable. I think that Pete Carroll deserves a great deal of credit. I think that John Schneider and his scouting department deserve a great deal of credit. Pete Carroll gets some credit sometimes, nationally speaking, but I don't know that John Schneider gets much attention. He never has received much attention of executive of the year. I think that he deserves some credit for this as well. But truly, it is an opportunity to kind of highlight some of the behind the scenes movements that have really made this team arguably the team to beat in the NFC. I don't know that a lot of people would have believed that they would be assured of a top 3 seeding entering week 17 of the NFL season just a month or two ago. But yet, that's exactly where the Seahawks find themselves. And you can make an argument that the Green Bay Packers are head and shoulders above everybody else. We'll see. I think that the Seahawks, again, are a team that is rising as the season ends, and that's exactly where you want to be. And, unlike those Green Bay Packers, and at least their coaching staff, they don't have the experience and the track record of success in the postseason that Pete Carroll and the Seahawks have. And that is just yet one more reason to be really excited about where the Seahawks season could wind up.
There's still a lot of room for improvement. There's no question about it. There were a lot of missed opportunities, particularly on offense. We'll be breaking that down on our Tuesday show. But it does feel like that's the kind of victory, beating the Rams, a team that has dominated that series as of late. They had won 5 of the past 6 games between those two teams. To go out and make that statement, particularly on defense, I think it put the rest of the NFC on notice as we head into the final week of the regular season and the playoffs quickly approach. When we come back in the second quarter, as always, it's time for our Monday mailbag. Tons of questions from you, the 12s. We're going to answer as many as we can. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you ready for some football? College football heads into bowl season, and there are some big matchups coming up this weekend. And the NFL regular season is finishing up with the playoff picture becoming clear. There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use promo code LOCKEDON to receive 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Victory Monday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by the betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. It's time for our Monday mailbag segment, Rob. Let's kick it off with a fantastic question here from Azaz Rashid. He tweets, if Seattle could manage roster spots, why would you grant Damon Harrison's release and have the chance of him ending up with a possible playoff rival? In this business, I would rather be Belichickian ruthless than be carelessly loyal. What say you? I think this is a fantastic question.
Oh, I like the question for lots of reasons, and Belichickian ruthless and carelessly loyal would just be part of it. I think that that's a great way of expressing that. But I'll just say this. I think that Damon Harrison is a terrific run stuffer. I think that he has played a significant role in Seattle's improved defense. At the same time, I'm also excited about what Brian Monet has provided the club as well. And I also think that it kind of you lose some of the luster if you're Damon Harrison, if this is, as has been reported, basically just complaining because he was not among the players that the team felt that they needed to make active for this game. That would say something about a lack of commitment to the team, a lack of competitiveness. I mean, let's just face it. This is the Rams team that everybody knew that they were going to try to come in and throw the ball rather than run the ball. So Harrison just simply wouldn't be as important. And then again, as the COVID situation, things like that, I don't know that teams are going to be quite as eager to sign a player like Harrison because, unfortunately, at least in my opinion, there's a lot of run stuffers out there who do make that position a little bit more of a dime in the dozen kind of a thing. So I don't know. There's going to be a lot of teams out there who are going to be so eager to sign Harrison. I wish that Harrison would instead kind of bite his lip a little bit and say, okay, this is what's best for the team. I'd rather return to the Seahawks rather than take my chances out there as a free agent.
Well, Pete Carroll did say this morning that this is a done deal. He's going to be released. He talked to him this morning. He told reporters yesterday that was going to happen before they made a statement on what decision had been made by the team. And clearly, it's time to move on. And Harrison's been tweeting about it too. And as much as I like Damon Harrison, I think he's played well for the Seahawks. This is a situation where this isn't like this is some big name star. Like if Jamal Adams came to the Seahawks, like, I want to be released tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, the Seahawks would just be sitting there laughing and nothing is going to be happening. They're not going to be doing anything there if one of their big stars is making a fuss at this stage of the season. But Harrison was going to be inactive for this game. They would rather play the younger Brian Monet, who maybe offers a little bit more as a pass rusher at that nose tackle position and has more upside at this stage of his career compared to Harrison, who's now 32 and in his 11th NFL season. And I think that this is just one of those cases. They don't want this to become a distraction. And so rather than this stall out and we're going to wait and wait and hope Damon Harrison changes his mind, they're just going to release him. And the other thing right now, we have one regular season game left and you have COVID testing protocols, all the other things going on out there. I don't think it's guaranteed that Damon Harrison latches on with another team. And even if he does, it's going to take him time to get acclimated and you're going to have to go through your testing again. And so for that reason here, I understand the gripe and I understand the fans that are wondering why can't we just keep him from a depth perspective, but that's not what Damon Harrison wants to do here. And with him not being a player that is an absolute necessity on your defense with Brian Monet returning, you just cut your losses here. I think both sides mutually agreed to that. Bam Season tweets, what flexibility do you think Daryl Taylor brings to the Leo position if he gets to play this season? Does that mean a decreased role for Rasheem Green or Benson Maioa?
I think that it does. If you are fortunate enough to have Daryl Taylor, be able to play this year, then sure. Obviously, that if one player is playing, then that means that one other player has to not play quite as much. And I think specifically with Benson Maioa, even though I think that he's played very well, Rasheem Green, plays that Leo position sometimes. Carlos Dunlap plays that position sometimes. But at the same time, in terms of just size and speed, then he. Taylor is most like Mayoa in that he is 6'4", 260 pounds. Mayoa, of course, is 6'3", 250 roughly, you know, and so they do have a similar size speed combination. But at the same time, I think this would be an excellent problem for the Seahawks to have. I put kind of problem in air quotes because Taylor is a legitimate pass rusher. One of the concerns I do have for the Seahawks is that I would like to see them continue to be able to improve their pass rush, especially considering the quarterbacks that they're going to be facing in the march to a Super Bowl or potential Super Bowl berth. So I think that, again, this would be the kind of problem that you're hoping to have at this point.
Yeah, I don't know that this necessarily is going to provide you that much flexibility at this stage of the season. You have to remember, he hasn't practiced at all. And so trying to get him up to speed here with one regular season game left to play, even if he practices this week, I'll be really surprised if he's out there suited up against the 49ers. So that would mean he hasn't played in a single regular season game as a rookie. And then you're going to just throw him out onto the field to play in January postseason games. I'm not saying that they won't make that decision. I don't know where he fits into that puzzle when you've missed your entire rookie season injured. If we were earlier in the season, then definitely Daryl Taylor, with his upside, is a player that could cut into the snaps for Green, Mayoa, any of the other defensive ends that could be playing that Leo spot. But you're also going to have Carlos Dunlap there. I mean, I just don't know that he's going to have many opportunities, if any, here. They want to get him back on the field. They're very excited about him. There's a reason they traded up to draft this kid. They love the physical tools, his athleticism and flexibility off the edge. I just don't know that it's realistic, though, that you're going to be getting anything out of him. I wouldn't expect he's going to come into the playoffs and just suddenly be a guy that you can count on to rush 15 snaps a game and is able to turn up heat on quarterbacks. Next season, he's a player that I still have high hopes for. I don't know that you're going to get anything out of him at this point. Joey Walker tweets, "What do you think is the biggest change for this defense since the first half of the season? I feel they have been more aggressive in press coverage and don't see the 15-yard cushions anymore prior to the snap on receivers. DJ Reed has transformed this defense."
I would agree that DJ Reed has transformed the defense and that he is, you know, obviously a shorter, quicker type of cornerback than what Seattle has prioritized on the outside in the past. That said, to me, this is Carlos Dunlap. I think that you as we talked about when Seattle first pulled off that trade, I thought the Seattle was getting a true ace, a true number one kind of a pass rushing threat. And I don't think that Dunlap is necessarily, a guy who's going to get you 15 sacks, but I think he could get you 10 if you had him for a full season. I really do. And I think that his impact on the outside has kind of been what has triggered the rest of Seattle's pass rush to play better. That's allowing the team to play a little bit more physically and a little bit more, kind of contentiously, getting up and playing some bump and run coverage and things like that. And then again, I just think that the familiarity of all the players kind of buying in and really Seattle's coaching staff really being able to assess their players' individual strengths, I think that you're seeing all of that kind of come together. But to me, again, the real spark, I think, was the trade for Carlos Dunlap.
I'm going to actually just go with one word, and Jamal Adams mentioned it yesterday. It's communication. And it goes back to the cohesiveness and chemistry. Yes, adding Dunlap has been a game changer for that pass rush. And you've seen a trickle-down effect, a domino effect, so to speak. Everybody else has stepped up their game on that pass rush. And now they're in the top 7 for sacks in the NFL as a team. Who would have thought that they were going to be positioned with what we saw the first 6-7 games a year, where they were in the bottom of the league in that regard? And so they've really done a complete 180 there. But I think the communication on the back half has really helped the pass rush as well. You are getting much better play from the secondary as a whole. I think Jamal Adams being more comfortable in the scheme, Quandre Diggs playing at an all-pro level as we expected that he would this year in his first full season with the Seahawks, he's really stepped up his game. DJ Reed on the outside, Shaquille Griffin coming back has been a big boon for this defense. And of course, in the middle, their linebacker still might be the best positional group on this football team, especially with Jordan Brooks coming of age here at the end of his rookie season. And so there's a number of different reasons, but to me, the communication and the cohesiveness of this unit, they've gotten healthier. They've gotten better. A lot of their talented players are back on the field that missed time early in the season. I think those factors have had a bigger impact on their play than necessarily the adjustments. There have been some that have been made schematically, but I think the communication and chemistry aspect is really the biggest difference in this defense. Daniel tweets, which NFC offense do you think would provide the greatest challenge personnel and scheme-wise for the Seahawks defense in the postseason?
From the NFC, no question in my mind that the greatest personnel, challenge would be the Green Bay Packers. Whether it be Aaron Rodgers, whether it be now the three-headed monster the Green Bay has at the running back position. Aaron Jones is a star. If you saw all the snow last night in Green Bay, A.J. Dillon can be that kind of powerful guy. Jamal Williams is a good running back as well. Devontae Adams is an absolute superstar. Robert Tonyan. I mean, the Green Bay Packers are absolutely loaded in terms of just talent. Scheme-wise, I would argue the New Orleans Saints, just because of their ability to be able to go from a passing offense with Drew Brees as well as the running ability of Taysom Hill. So scheme-wise, I think that would be a challenge, but I don't think that they have quite the Jimmys and Joes as much as the X's and O's that for that club. So again, it's kind of a wishy-washy answer there, Corbin, but in terms of, again, talent, it's Green Bay, no question in my mind. In terms of scheme, New Orleans, no question in my mind.
I'm actually going to go with Tampa Bay when we're talking about personnel, because you have to worry about Rob Gronkowski, and obviously they are loaded at receiver. And I know that Tampa Bay has been up and down at times this year, but who's going to count out Tom Brady in the postseason? He might be the best quarterback still in the NFC aside from Aaron Rodgers in this playoff picture. And so I look at the weapons they have on the outside, especially after they added Antonio Brown. And you've got Rob Gronkowski you have to deal with. Who knows what the running back situation looks like for them in the playoffs? Ronald Jones has been banged up. But if he gets healthy, they've got Leonard Fournette back there as well, LeSean McCoy. That is a team with a lot of playoff-tested players on offense. As far as scheme goes, I'm actually going to go with the Green Bay Packers there, because I think Matt LaFleur and company have done a fantastic job. They were under fire for some of the draft choices that they made as an organization back in April, but A.J. Dillon, he's been dealing with COVID a good portion of the year. Getting him out there and seeing what he's capable of with the running game they've got, I think they scheme up that ground attack really well. And I think Aaron Rodgers has bought into what Matt LaFleur wants to do offensively. They mix in more motion than they were doing with Mike McCarthy as the offensive coordinator and the head coach during his time with the team. And so I think the Packers, from a scheme perspective, their personnel is going to be an issue too, but I think from a scheme perspective, that's a team that's going to be dangerous in the postseason. Cold Ones tweets, is Jordan Brooks Seattle's best first-round pick in the last 5 years?
I think that you can make an argument that he is. I'm still a big fan of LJ Collier. You know, we know what Rashad Penny can be when he's truly healthy. But at the same time, I think that one of the things that you have to consider is that in the last 5 years, the earliest that Seattle has selected has been 27th overall. And that was the selection that they made with Brooks as well as Penny back in 2018. So I think that part of the reason why that Jordan Brooks is going to get this type of attention is, for one, he plays linebacker position, where it should be fairly obvious that the guy's a star if he's going to go in the first round. And then number two, he's coming off arguably his best performance of the season so far. So again, I think that is a, kudos to Jordan Brooks. I think that he is absolutely justifying his level of play. I would also argue, however, that again, LJ Collier has really turned it around in his second season. And I think that it's important to kind of remember that how much of his first season was kind of wiped out with that ankle injury. But again, to me, this is a credit to the Seahawks scouting staff. I know that they don't get a lot of attention, a lot of love, because they draft in a different way. They're looking for football players. They're looking for physical, tough guys that are reliable. To me, one of the most exciting things about Seattle's first round and second round selections over the last several years has just been their reliability. Even if you want to knock a selection back in 2016 at Jermaine Ifedi, as we predicted, Corbin, Ifedi has gone on the Chicago Bears, and he's been a full season starter for them as well. That's the kind of players that the Seahawks prioritize, whereas lots of other clubs out there are prioritizing the skill position players, a lot of flash, but not necessarily a lot of consistency.
It's very early, as you mentioned, and LJ Collier is playing much better this year. So maybe he ends up being a real stud at that base defensive end position, also can play defensive tackle, reduces inside. Maybe he ends up being a really good first-round pick after a disappointing rookie season. But I'm going to go as far as saying Jordan Brooks is the best first-round pick the Seahawks have made since Bruce Irvin. And if he reaches his potential, this is a system that is catered well for linebackers. We've seen the success Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright have had throughout their careers. Jordan Brooks is that next guy in line, and he's already making an impact with his limited opportunities. I wouldn't be shocked that when it's all said and done, that he is one of the top two or three first-round picks that John Schneider has made. He is up there in that class, maybe. Earl Thomas is the best first-rounder that he's ever had. Russell Okung was better than people give him credit for. He had some injury issues. And then Bruce Irvin. But I think since 2012, this is definitely the best first-round pick that they have made. He fits their scheme well. The speed and the athleticism at the second level, the tackling ability, the aggressiveness, the instincts. You've seen it on display these past few weeks, and he's just getting started. That's the scary thing. When he really gets his feet under him, and he's been in this scheme for a while, and he's more of a featured player on defense, he has a chance to be a real game changer at linebacker for Seattle. So this is kind of one of those wait and see ones, but if I had to make a prediction, I think he is going to be one of the best first rounders that Schneider's had. And you can see the vast array of skills that he brings to the table already making an impact for the Seahawks on the field as a rookie. We come back in the third quarter. It's time for some defensive takeaways. I'm sure that we'll be talking a little bit more about that Jordan Brooks character when we revisit yesterday's 20-9 victory over the Rams to clinch an NFC West crown. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited. Until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for Victory Monday, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we'll be breaking down the playoff race, where the Seahawks stand compared to other NFC championship contenders, with 1 week left to play as teams jockey for seeding. Plus, we'll look at some offensive takeaways from Seattle's Week 16 win over the Rams. Let's talk defense, Rob. As we mentioned earlier in the show, this unit continues to play better and better each week. There were still some skeptics out there going into this game thinking, okay, you guys are playing better on defense, but who have you played? Now you're playing a Rams team with a bunch of really quality skill players. They've got a really good offensive mastermind in Sean McVay calling the plays on the sideline. Let's see how your defense handles that. Well, I don't think anybody's laughing now after they held the Rams to just 3 field goals in this game. Really a clinic. This is the best defense we have seen from the Seahawks since 2014. This is the first time since that second year that the Seahawks made the Super Bowl. They've had 5 straight games with 20 or less points given up, and they're doing it a little bit differently than what the Legion of Boom era did. This is a different style defense. They are succeeding in different ways, but it's a lot of fun to see some of the new faces like Jordan Brooks and Jamal Adams rising to the occasion and really putting this defense in a position where they can carry this team if the offense isn't on its A game.
Yeah, that was the most exciting thing about it, in my opinion, is, again, we talked about this in the first quarter, what a remarkable job that Pete Carroll and his coaches have done with completely changing the identity of the Seahawks back to a kind of a defensive mindset. And that's the type of team that, you know, traditionally wins Super Bowls. I know that we're coming off of a year in which the Kansas City Chiefs basically won the championship based on their explosive offense. But, you know, people forget that it was that their their defense, including Frank Clark, that actually, you know, kind of nailed that victory for them. And so to me, that is what we've been kind of waiting to see, is if Seattle's defense would get to the championship level. And as you just pointed out, you know, five consecutive games of allowing 20 points or less, something that Seattle has not done since they last were playing for the Lombardi Trophy. Again, that is really is a strong statement right there. And I think that you can't overstate the fact that this was a Los Angeles Rams team that has a star quarterback position, Jared Goff, former number one overall selection. You have some dynamic weapons out there at the wide receiver position. And you mentioned it, Sean McVay is about as well-respected of a play caller and an offensive designer as there is in all of the NFL. The Seahawks had lost five of the last six against the Rams. That this was a team that I think nationally speaking, there's a lot of people out there who will kind of say, you don't want to play in Seattle. The 12s are crazy. Well, obviously there has not been any fans allowed in Lumen Field all year long. And this, to me, this was a game where you saw Seattle ratchet up the physicality and the intensity. They simply wanted it more than the Rams did. And I think that the goal line stand is obviously the easiest one to kind of point out. But just the fact that the Seattle was creating a turnover, the huge interception by Quandre Diggs was obviously a game changer, but also the two fourth down stops, again, one of those being at the goal line, to me, it created a situation where the Rams essentially had three turnovers, and obviously Seattle had none. And that, to me, was the difference in this game. The physicality, the intensity, the turnover battle, it sounds like something that Pete Carroll has been preaching all year long.
Let's talk about that goal line stand here, and specifically Jordan Brooks. He finished with a team-high 8 tackles in this contest, despite playing only 28 defensive snaps. He was extremely efficient, and on that goal line stand, which was set up by Jamal Adams tripping up Daryl Henderson at the 2-yard line. Otherwise, Henderson scores, and we're not even having this discussion right now. But it was first and goal at the 2-yard line, and Brooks gets into the backfield. He was aided by Brian Monet, blowing up his blocker across from him. Brooks shoots in the backfield and brings down Malcolm Brown for a 2-yard loss. Two plays later, they're back at the 1-yard line, and Jared Goff tries to sneak it in. Brooks teams up with KJ Wright to say, nope, thou shall not pass. You're not getting past this goal line. And Goff is stuffed just short. And then after a review, the challenge ended up failing for the Seahawks, but the review gave them a chance to go over some things defensively on the sideline. Brooks comes up to the line of scrimmage and stonewalls Brown at the 1-yard line on fourth down to create a turnover on downs. It was one of the most impressive four-play sequences that you are going to see from a defense, and in Jordan Brooks's case, a rookie linebacker, to be able to make those plays the way that he did there. He really was a game changer for the Seahawks defense yesterday.
He really was, just a remarkable performance by all of Seattle's defense, on that goal line stand. I mean, to me, that was one of the most exciting things about it is you saw some of the tried and true type of performers on Seattle's defense, like KJ Wright and his ability to just blow up, the tight end, knock him into the backfield, and that created the angle for Brooks to be able to make that tackle on the actual fourth down. But then one of the, so Brooks as a newcomer to be able to make that play. KJ Wright as one of Seattle's longest tenured players, to be able to make that kind of the very unselfish, very a play that a lot of fans maybe wouldn't have even noticed just because he didn't make the tackle himself. Jamal Adams, you talked about, racing around from the edge to be able to trip up Daryl Henderson, who is the Rams' fastest back. I mean, this is a legitimate 4.4 guy. That was just a remarkable closing speed. We saw that before with Adams. When he was able to close in on Dwayne Haskins, 2 weeks ago, but a similar type of play. And again, to me, it's so refreshing to see players who have bought in to what Pete Carroll and the Seahawks players have been preaching. That's not a normal play in terms of the speed that Adams showed, as well as the intensity. And you could just see the way that Seattle played this game. I mean, especially after halftime, they just ratcheted it up again, the physicality. I mean, when the listeners who will go back and watch this game a little bit, just look at the ferocity with which when Seattle would blitz, the way their linemen linebackers, the way their safeties, the way their cornerbacks would attack the blitzers. I mean, it was almost like the Chris Carson kind of physicality we've seen on the offensive side of the ball. That's the same type of physicality that Seattle showed on the defensive side of the ball. And frankly, that's why they won this game.
Yeah, and I think the other reason they won this game is the pass rush was consistently harassing Jared Goff all game long. And you want to talk about something that was misleading. The Seahawks had only two quarterback hits in the entire first half. But if you were watching the game, you noticed that Jared Goff was getting forced out of the pocket a lot. And there were several times he just had to tuck and scramble for a 2 or 3 yard gain because he had been forced out of the pocket. He was having to unload the football earlier than he wanted to because he had pressure bearing down on him. And they were doing a lot of their damage with 3 and 4 man rushes. They did not blitz that much. Only 21% of their defensive snaps in this game, the Seahawks brought a fifth or extra rushers. And so Jamal Adams only blitzed 3 times by my count. This was a game plan where they said, we're going to win by dropping back in coverage. We're going to play guys up near the box, but we're going to drop back into coverage, and we're going to let our defensive line get the job done. And they were able to do it. I want to just call out Benson Mayoa because I thought he had a fantastic game. Did not make any sacks, but he had 6 quarterback pressures. He had a tackle for loss in the run game, 2 quarterback hits, and he also set up Jaron Reed's second sack late in the fourth quarter by getting immediate pressure after he ripped inside against Joseph Noteboom, forced Goff off of his spot right into Reed's hands. I thought he was extremely disruptive. This was his best game in his second stint with the Seahawks.
Yeah, it was a terrific performance. We talked about that we thought that the Rams' offensive line was pretty vulnerable. You know, we, of course, focused so much on the Seahawks and, you know, and where they've had some injury issues up front. But the loss of Andrew Whitworth really has kind of derailed the Rams' offense. And so kudos to Benson Mayoa for being able to take advantage of that. As you mentioned, the 6 quarterback pressures, that's an awful lot. That's Aaron Donald. Like stuff, and so that was huge. And then the interior Seattle's defensive tackles, Puna Ford, we talk about a lot. Jaron Reed had a spectacular performance in this game as well. But it was the constant pressure. You could see that Jared Goff simply was not very comfortable. I know there's going to be a lot of talk about how he, you know, in the toughness that he showed, and it, hats off to the toughness that he showed with that dislocated or fractured thumb there. But he wasn't that accurate even from the get go. There were times that he was perfectly accurate, but there were other, terrible throws. And I think that a big part of that was because Seattle was dropping as many defenders into coverage as they were. Jared Goff is known for being a very instinctive player who kind of reads the blitzes and can adjust quickly. But because Seattle was attacking mostly with 3 and 4 down rushers and still being able to get in his face, that again is one of the biggest reasons why Seattle emerged from this game with the victory.
One other player that I want to give a shout out to, we've mentioned him a few times, and obviously with the Damon Harrison news, with him requesting a release, it sounds like the Seahawks are prepared to fulfill that request. Brian Monet had a very good game in his first game back from a high ankle sprain. Only had 2 tackles, but again, the stat sheet does not reflect on how well he was playing. The Rams had a really hard time running the ball between the guards. Their success in the run game, for the most part, came running outside of the tackles. They had 1 play that they were able to get big yardage running up the gut, and I don't believe Monet was even in the game at that point, but he played 26 snaps, and what he provided that Damon Harrison has not been able to, he was able to rush the passer. 3 quarterback pressures. We mentioned how the defense as a whole was harassing Jared Goff. Monet had 3 of those pressures. He also had a quarterback hit on him, and Goff actually was able to complete that pass for a first down, but he had Monet in his face quite a bit in the first half. Monet had a couple really nice plays in that goal line stand as well. He gives them that 340-plus pound behemoth in the middle that looks like he is just starting to figure things out as a pass rusher, really becoming way more than just a run-stuffing nose tackle. And so given his age and his upside, that is why he's the one that's active, and now Damon Harrison is wanting out.
Yeah, exactly. And you talked about before, I mean, he provides you a little bit more of a pass rush. He's got those real long arms. He gets those up in the air and is able to, kind of distract the quarterback and kind of close some of those passing windows. And so that's significant as well. This is a Seahawks team that, I know in some of the conversations that I've been fortunate enough to have with some of Seattle scouts and John Schneider himself. I mean, one of the things they took the most pride in way back in 2013 when they won the Super Bowl was that they had the youngest roster ever to win an NFL Super Bowl. And so I know that that is something that they have prioritized for a long time. So with Brian Monet, as you mentioned, he is a significantly younger player than Harrison. And so that is something that they believe in and something that they have shown kind of their focus in on that for going all the way back in their tenure.
It's really difficult to nitpick in this game just because the Seahawks defense, it was just a dominant effort holding the Rams to 9 points. There were a few missed tackles out there. Jamal Adams had a big one that he allowed Tyler Higbee to slip out of his grasp, but he more than made up for it with the number of big plays that he made throughout this game. They were able to get pressure on Jared Goff. They limited the Rams on third down in the second half in particular, holding him under 50% for the game. They stopped him on both of their fourth down opportunities. It just really was a complete effort at all three levels of the defense. And this group, I don't think it's an overreaction saying that this group is peaking defensively at the right time. They've seemed to find the right personnel groupings at all three levels. And the depth is apparent, especially with their pass rush and in the interior. They just have a number of different guys that are stepping up and rising to the occasion. And so this is a defense that's going to be really fun to watch as Seattle gears up for its regular season finale and prepares to host at least one home playoff game in January. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Make sure to leave us a review as well. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to be looking at the playoff race. What needs to happen for the Seahawks to still get the number one seed in the NFC? What potential opponents could they play in the first round if they play in the wild card round? And of course, we'll look at some offensive takeaways from Sunday's win over the Rams. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.